This is the Money Talks podcast. Subscribe now on iTunes. Listen to Michael Campbell and Money Talks live on Saturday mornings on CKNW Vancouver, 770 CHQR Calgary, 630 CHED in Edmonton, and live on the Radio Player app.
B-52's Love Shack. 1989 is the year. Thousands of students occupied Tiananmen Square. The Chinese government declared martial law and killed hundreds of them. It's also the year the economic consonance model of Martin Armstrong predicted the fall to the date of the Berlin Wall. The model was correct. Martin Armstrong will join me in just a moment's time, but it's time first for the quote of the week. This comes courtesy of Marty Armstrong, one of his favorites, describing how currencies reflect so much in history, but also so much in the movement of the economy. This is Calvin Coolidge. During this new stage of depression, the refugee gold and foreign government reserve deposits were constantly driven by fear, hither and yon over the world. We were to see currencies demoralized, governments embarrassed, as fear drove the gold from one country to another. In fact, there was a mass of gold and short-term credit which behaved like a loose cannon on the deck of the world in a tempest-tossed era. One of the key concepts to understand is, of course, how currency moves, why they move, and the implications of that. We've seen it in Canada. We talk every week here about the Canadian dollar and the value because it impacts directly your purchasing power, the cost of our assets. One of the things that people fail to understand is while we had this monster move in the Canadian real estate market, especially centered in Vancouver and Toronto, if you were an American, you made no money. Why? Because the currency fell faster then the price rose. Understanding currencies is key. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show. You could probably tell that because I flew to Tampa Bay 4 to get the chance to talk to who I've called the world's top economic and financial forecaster, Martin Armstrong, Armstrong Economics. Marty, what a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'm glad you came down.
Well, 1983, I remember going into a hotel room in the Hyatt Regency in Vancouver. You had a very old, you know, by today's standards, of course, but this big square box computer on the desk. And you said, I want to show you something. And what Marty proceeded to show me was the first time I'd ever heard voice recognition. So Marty just asked the computer, can you show me the trading for gold in the last 7 days? The computer then puts up the different the values and the chart. Then Marty says, can you show me that pattern going back 100 years, but a 90% cooperation, the same thing for 90%. Does it mirror it? This whole list comes up. Marty says, that's too many. Give me 95% correlation. Give me 98%. And here comes these few things. He said, computer, tell me what price the probability is coming into next week. That was the beginning I'd ever seen of model-based investment planning, let alone the cyclical analysis. But that analysis, as I said many times, is only as good as its predictive level. Well, the Armstrong economic model is the most accurate predictive model I've seen. So let me get to you, Marty, with this. Just quickly, what's the biggest financial problem or deal facing us today? What keeps you up at night worried about the rest of us?
It's basically the pension funds, and people don't quite appreciate, but it's mostly the pension funds in the government sector. I mean, that's as they start to go down, and this is a consequence that every time a government does one thing to solve one problem, it creates the problem for that the future solution will need. So we lowered interest rates to stimulate the economy, but then what happened? Then all the pension funds are going bust. Mm-hmm. So it's the pension funds largely, not necessarily the private sector, but it's the government sector. And largely because they haven't funded them. And they just look at us as absolute herds of cattle or sheep. And they've never had to bother with funding this stuff because they assumed we're always going to have enough, an endless supply of people to tax, and that will be the future payment. So the problem comes in when birth rates start going down and all this, you know. And, you know, it's setting the stage. We see California, you know, it's everywhere. Every country, Germany, half the municipalities are basically insolvent. You have in the U.S., Indiana is complete. People are just leaving. This is what the fall of Rome was about. People don't understand why I make a distinction between movable and non-movable assets. The non-movable, which is real estate, if they keep raising taxes and taxes and taxes and you can't afford it, what happens? You just pick up and leave. And Rome, at the peak of the economy, had a population of 1 million. At the bottom, it fell to 15,000. Mm-hmm. So obviously people just walked away.
And we're seeing that in Detroit. I mean, that was yes. one of their thing. Their industrial base left, the people left, but the pension stayed.
And you're seeing houses that used to be very nice in the 1920s that are just empty and vacant today.
But that's what's so interesting about this. A lot of people, virtually everyone, doesn't make the connection. And that's a great example of what I love to do in Money Talks. So here's the pension problem. People say, yeah, but it's not my pension. Well, actually, it's going to be your house, maybe. You know, actually, it'll be your interest rates, maybe. It might be your stocks, maybe. You know, there's a direct relation that comes right into our livelihoods.
Well, California, you know, they were looking at raising taxes to bail out CalPERS.
Yes.
Because it didn't make enough money for state government employees. But then there is another aspect to this. I mean, as you know, I work a lot with governments behind the curtain. And you have California, New York, and a number of states now joining, lobbying Washington to basically take all private pension funds and dump them in their control, and they say, then that will solve our problem.
And haven't we seen that in Poland when they confiscated?
Yeah.
So I'm saying it's not unprecedented. We're seeing
Done the same thing in Argentina.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Let me ask you, impact of the pension crisis, and I know I'm oversimplifying, but the impact of the pension crisis, so we look at potential impact on a municipality, so you got impact on people moving out, which real estate. I mean, who wants to move back into Chicago right now when they've just raised property taxes 33%?
Nobody.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. I mean, there's net, the Census Bureau has shown that, you know, Indiana, basically, and Illinois in particular, you're seeing net migration out. So they're losing population.
Okay, what about impact on interest rates?
Well, you know, that infects basically across the board as well. And there we have major problems. I deal internationally. I just got back from the Middle East and I've been in Europe 3 weeks before that. Virtually a good stiff wind will blow the European banking system down.
Yeah.
Why? Because they never effectively created a national debt. So to be politically correct, every bank had to have a piece of everybody's debt within Eurozone. So now Greece starts to go down, they take haircuts, you're basically reducing the reserves of the bank. So then you move to negative interest rates. And in the States, you know, people don't understand what's been going on, but all our major banking clients in Europe, they simply picked up their cash. And you have a choice. Gee, if I park it at the ECB, I give them 0.5%. No, let me see. I'll ship it to our U.S. branch. They'll park it at the Fed, and I'll earn 0.5%. So you have excess reserves at $3 trillion.
But a great example of how governments institute policies without understanding the consequences, which you knew better than anyone I know, knows all of the historical precedent, but think about that one. It's straightforward to understand for people. I mean, economies survive when more people, more money comes in. You know, that's how things work. And here they have institute a policy that encourages massive amounts of money to leave Europe at a time it's in deflation and a time when there's no growth.
Yeah.
You know, but it's their policy that did it.
Well, governments, basically, if you're going to, you know, their idea is we're going to stimulate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you stimulate? Well, we're going to buy the bonds back from the banks. And hopefully the banks will lend money. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, but they don't. And
they didn't.
No. And everybody, you had all these crazy people, analysts, pretending, oh, this is going to be hyperinflation, etc. It depends upon where the money goes, all right? Yes, the Fed bought in $4 trillion. Oh, wow, that's going to be hyperinflation. No, it won't. One is all these theories are antiquated. They're based upon the fixed exchange rate system from Bretton Woods. And I'm the one that started writing questions for the House Banking Committee because these people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
China said, oh, you're going to buy 30-year bonds? Thank you very much. They sold. These theories assume it's just a domestic economy, that there isn't anybody on the outside. So if I buy in the bonds, oh, that will put more money in the system, and that will ease it. That assumes an American owns the bonds you're buying. And it's just not that way.
I got to take a break. I'm coming back. I'm going to talk Martin Armstrong's model clearly spelled out the beginning of a sovereign debt crisis in Europe in 2009-10. We saw that with Greece. Said it was escalating in the October 2015. I want to get the implications. I want to talk about government bonds because I know Marty's very concerned on your behalf on government bonds, volatility, currencies, all of that coming your way. And don't worry, we got more. We got a shocking stat for you. We're going to continue this part of the conversation. All of that coming your way. You're listening to Money Talks on the Chorus Radio Network and the Money Talks Network. Phil Collins' top hit, Another Day in Paradise. It's also the year that Martin Armstrong's economic confidence model predicted the top in the Nikkei Index. In fact, Marty phoned me that day, December 29th, 1989, and said, Mike, just so you know, 39,000 is the top. It's going to 8,000, and it ain't coming back in your lifetime. Now, I didn't know at the time if he was just predicting I wasn't going to live very long, but here we are 20 years later. And obviously that prediction was correct. Marty joins me live here at Tampa Bay, Florida. Marty, I just want to get an update. The other thing that, of course, you've been chronicling and predicting has been the sovereign debt crisis. You started with the prediction at the World Outlook Conference. You did it for us, saying this was 1998, and you're telling us in 2009, 2010, Greek bonds will go bust that far in advance, and that would begin a European crisis. You've told our audience at the World Outlook that the sovereign debt crisis would get another leg. The next leg of it would become apparent in October 1st, 2015. I wanted to get a quick update, and we'll get the implications in one moment, of where you see that heading right now, the sovereign debt crisis.
Well, you have to understand, this is an economic collapse, not a market collapse. Mm-hmm. So it's like one domino pushing over into the next, into the next, into the next. And the two things you have to understand is, where does the sovereign debt crisis begin? First, it begins always on the peripheral, never in the core. Mm-hmm. So that meant Greece, the external ones, start to go down. And then it spreads in, all right? Secondly, within a particularly a domestic economy, where is it going to begin? It begins at the municipal level. And the state and province level. Why? Because they can't print the money. Mm-hmm. The feds can. All right. So all they can do is raise taxes more and more and more. All right. So they still, no government that I have dealt with and I look at globally has figured out yet, gee, this isn't working. Mm-hmm. It's they're only interested in, well, what do I got to do next? I got to pay this bill next week. Mm-hmm. All right, so, well, we'll just raise taxes. Okay, nobody's stepping back and saying, okay, we keep doing this. Where are we going? I mean, every revolution throughout history has begun with taxation. Once you pass a level where people can no longer survive, we're all happy to ignore government and politics. They leave me alone, I leave them alone. Okay, you're taking a piece of the action. All right, we understand that. When you start impacting the way people can live, now you're into serious problems. And, you know, all this stuff about socialism and everything, it sounds great, wonderful, but what's actually happened over the course of the years? I mean, about 70% of the national debts on average globally have been accumulative interest. So it didn't go help roads and schools and all this stuff. It's just basically regurgitating the debt that keeps going. And then you look at the standard of living has been declining dramatically. This is really what they don't understand. This is why Trump was elected. You have people coming out saying, I can't take this anymore. All right. Years ago, all right, a family could get by with just the husband working. All right. Then you put in the payroll tax. Oh, we need this for World War II. We'll rescind it afterwards. And of course, any tax they put in never disappears. It only gets worse. So today, you know, you talk about women's rights, et cetera, equal pay. Women have lost the right to stay home and raise the kids. It takes for any, you know, family that's starting, young family, it takes two salaries just to get by. So where is this improving the standard of living? Mm-hmm. You know, it's you keep raising these taxes and taxes and taxes, and it's just, you know, and it's being squandered and wasted on government. You know, you've got, you know, your guy taking, you know, your head of state taking a vacation, $500,000 it cost for his vacation. Hillary Clinton goes and rents a house for a vacation, $150,000 for a month. Mm-hmm. Who lives this way?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you, okay, so the implications, and a fascinating point by I hope everyone really focused on was we're starting to see the ripple because it starts on, you know, countries you might say, well, that's not important to me or that's
right.
not important. Maybe a city like Stockton, California, bankrupt. You know, we're seeing it in others. Two counties in California recently, Atlantic City, Puerto Rico, before the hurricane. You know, the list starts getting longer. What, for an individual, that warning sign is flashing. Does that say, don't buy stocks, don't buy bonds, don't buy this, don't buy that?
Stay away from all municipal bonds. Mm-hmm. Even if you have one, well, this city's okay, my mind's doing all right, they will all be painted with the same brush.
Yeah.
Once they start going down, you know, the way capital acts, like that Herbert Hoover quote that you just spoke about, you know, take a look, read, you know, what he wrote there in his memoirs, 1931. You can get it off the internet, read it, and just replace the names to Greece, 2010.
Yeah.
All right, what did he say? He basically said, you know, once capital started moving, they didn't know where it was going. Yeah. It was going so fast. All right, once the trade in Greece went, what did the traders do? Oh, gee, we made a lot of money on that. Who's next? Oh, Portugal.
Yes.
Oh, look at Spain, Italy. Oh, France. They're the same. And that's a contagion.
This is a bit silly because it's, well, first of all, so the message is you meant municipal. What about at the state, provincial level?
The municipal starts to go first. You got 50% of the municipals in Germany basically in insolvency.
Right.
And she was waiting for the election, and after the election, they want to put a tax in now to try and bail out municipals. Okay, so it's always raise more taxes. And, you know, the bottom line is what do people really have at the end of the day? And that's what's starting to rise up. And that was Brit exit. We're seeing it in Barcelona. We're seeing everywhere across the globe. You know, and so you want to stay away from the municipals. It will then spread as a contagion to the state and provincial level, who also can't print money. Mm-hmm. All right, and then it manifests in the, for example, we'll see the euro break up, and as the economic conditions are different in all these things, and Greece is much more different, you know, economy than Germany.
Yeah, we got to take a break. Martin Armstrong is here. Go to armstrongeconomics.com. Armstrongeconomics.com. Marty writes, and he does it because he wants to help the public, a daily blog. It's actually prolific. I'll talk to you more about that. When we come back, I got a shocking stat for you, courtesy of Martin Armstrong. We'll talk more about the currencies and volatility, all of that on Money Talks.
they were pretty smart.
But we're featuring the music of the economic confidence model. That is Shania Twain. The year was 2000. Oh, sorry, the year was 1999 for that one. That don't impress me much. That's also the year that the Armstrong economic computer model correctly predicted the date of the low in oil and gold. Time out for this week's shocking stat of the week, and I'm going to get right to it. We've been talking about the implications of unfunded pensions for years. Marty produced a great report about 2 years ago on it, and as he mentioned, it's not just retirees who will pay the price. It's going to be taxpayers, which brings me to this week's shocking stat of the week. Teachers in Kentucky are demanding each Kentucky household pay $3,200 each for the next 2 years. Why? In order to top up the teacher's pension plan. That works out to $5.4 billion over just 2 years to top up Kentucky's 365,000 teachers and other public employees' unfunded pension schemes. Welcome to the future. Marty, as I say, you did a special report on pensions. And we talked a little bit earlier, but just a couple of quick notes on it.
We have been advising a number of pension funds that are coming to us now. One of them, a major Canadian one, I will say, did what we said. They got rid of government bonds and they started moving to the private sector. S&P went in and to give them a rating, and they said, "Oh, gee, you're taking on more risk." And they said, "No, we actually looked at what Armstrong said. We ran our own studies," and he's right. Corporate debt, AA, AAA, they don't, basically go belly up. Governments always default. Mm-hmm. S&P didn't know what to say. They just walked out and left them alone.
Well, I'm happy to hear that there's that concern, because I'm wondering, pensions are a little different issue because it's actuarial accounting meets demographics meets, very easily predictable payouts. And then you look and say, not enough. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen more action and more concern when it comes, because as I say, I'm not a public sector worker. I'm not going to get a pension from them. My Canada pension's fine. I'm not going to get a public sector pension. But I'm a taxpayer, and I'm going to be funding any shortfall. So
this is the whole problem, is that, like I said, they just look at us as an endless supply of revenue for them. And it's very, very bad. But this is the political outlook globally.
Let me just switch a tiny bit. It's all related, and that is I'm going back into the early 80s, and it's the first time I'd ever seen volatility modeling, which you did mm-hmm. through your computer. But people don't know, Martin has obviously an economic background, but he has a computer background. He started at RCA when computers filled the whole room, like you saw Imitation Game, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But starting there, which I think was a phenomenal benefit to learn the language, to learn the coding, to learn everything, and of course that's produced your Socrates model, produced the things I'm talking about with modeling, in which, as I say, you instructed me on saying the importance of doing it this way. But when you look at the volatility now, I mean, things change so fast. Where are we at? Is more coming, less coming? Are we finally going to slow down?
No, this is the calm before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to understand is they've gone after banks for, trading, etc. Retail participation is still at about 50% of what it was in 07. Now you've gone after the banks, and they've been paying a lot of big fines, etc. So a lot of the banks are now getting out of proprietary trading. And so consequently, the liquidity of markets is down dramatically. Now you take Europe, it's so socialistic, you wouldn't believe it, but they don't understand markets at all, so they made it illegal to short any government bonds. So basically they've destroyed the free market in Europe completely. So what do you get out of this? And that is, as soon as anything happens that scares capital, mm-hmm. Retail and institutional, you suddenly get no bid. That's what creates the flash crash. When I was called into the Brady Commission to investigate the 87 crash, they don't understand this stuff. And the first word, oh, we're going to find this your player that pushed this down. And I said to him, excuse me, do you realize that every investigation since 1907 began with those words, and you never found this big mythical short yet? It's that everybody's long, they try to sell, and guess what? There's no bid. All right, that's the volatility that concerns me. Whatever we saw between 07 to 09 is going to be magnified for the next one.
That sounds like a great promotion for Money Talks. How are you going to survive? You're going to listen to Money Talks here. Martin Armstrong, you can find it at armstrongeconomics.com. He writes a daily vlog on a variety of subjects. So the international perspective is really key. I want to come back to one thing, and you only have a minute, because you've been writing about it, Catalonia, part of that big picture breakup of the EU.
Yeah, it's this is very, very profound, because all you have to do is look at what the government is doing. Canada, you had two referendums for Quebec, okay? Britain, they allowed a referendum for Scotland, okay? Here, they're saying, the EU is saying, you don't even have the right to vote. And, you know, they've sent in troops, and now they've gone after Google to shut down any use of Google to communicate. And now, just yesterday, they closed the airspace to stop planes going into Barcelona because, oh, people are gathering there to protest against the government. Well, how do you think this is going to function? A basic human right is the right to revolt against the government when it's gone too far. American Revolution, French Revolution, English Civil War. I mean, this is part of humanity. We're not drones here or cattle to be herded and said, shut up, you do what we tell you. That's slavery.
Talking with Martin Armstrong, I'll take a break. I promise I'm just going to get his quick fix on gold. I got to talk about the loony with him. And a very... he's going to give one very positive prediction. So we're talking government. That's the thing. I always make a distinction. Government's in challenge right now, but there's something else that isn't that is in your benefit. We'll chat about that when we come back. Plus, my famous rapid round, the lightning round's coming with Martin Armstrong on the Money Talks Network.
You're all right, but that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night. That don't impress me much.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted, one moment that you captured, just let it slip.
Yo, his palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. This
financial show featuring M&M. The year is 2000. Lose Yourself is the song. That year in March was the peak of the NASDAQ index, and as you know, it took whatever it was, 16 years to get back there. The Armstrong Economic Confidence Model predicted the date of the crash of the dot-com bubble. Marty Armstrong is with me here live at Tampa Bay at the Armstrong Studios, I call them. Marty, I just want to, because time's now kind of short, I just want to fire a couple of things at you and get a comment. Marty has a, which is fantastic because you have access to it, it's called Socrates. It is the model that he uses, 33,000 variables plus, to arrive at the predictions I've been chatting about and the change in directions. The individual can, can go to individual stocks. In this case, I want to talk to him about gold. Why? Because the model gave a number, I think it was 1362.50 in this latest run.
Yes.
And said very specifically, that's your turn down on gold. That's exactly what happened.
It stopped at 40.
Yeah.
10 cents below it.
And so I want to just get a quick take on gold at this point.
You have to understand that the bulk of the people, all right, do not look at this as a collapsing government yet. We're getting there, but it's going to take some more. Plus, you have changes in the generational evolution. In India, despite everything we are saying, the younger generation are not buying gold like the older generation. The same thing here. You go to Starbucks or something and look at, you know, the youth. What are they doing? They hold up their phone. They don't even have paper money.
Yeah.
All right. So things do change. All right, so just because the older generation, oh, you go buy gold, that's the hedge against everything, it's not taking off. Why? Because there are other, you're not the only ones out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other segments, and eventually they will come up about. But you have to look at when the confidence in government collapses. We're talking about things, and, you know, there are people that are smart and saw, you know, Germany was going in the wrong direction. They hopped on a boat and they fled. Mm-hmm. The others kept saying, you know, oh, well, maybe it'll work out. I mean,
you can't ignore it.
I had a professor who basically explained it this way. Two people were on top of World Trade Center when it used to be there, and a good stiff wind blows them over. The pessimist immediately started praying, oh, my God, I'm going to die. Forgive me for all my sins. The optimist, as he's passing the fourth floor, said, well, so far, so good.
Okay, let me switch to the Canadian dollar. Same thing. I used Socrates for that. People asked me where I thought it was going. I said 83 cents. It bumps right there. Can't close there. I know that, but it bumps there. And now we slid back. What does your model tell
us
for the short
term? Sports is 78 and 20, you know, and a quarter, and you get a weekly closing below that, and it confirms we're heading back down again. What you have to understand is what breaks the system. Mm-hmm. And what breaks it is only when the U.S. dollar goes up. All right, that's, you know, when Roosevelt confiscated gold and devalued the dollar. Why? Because the dollar went up so high. You had protectionism. The U.S. felt they couldn't sell anything. When did that happen again? 1985. Pound went to par. What happened? They started G5. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if the dollar goes down, as you have all these people like, oh, the dollar's going to crash, whatever, Trump's fantastic. That's what he wants, lower dollar. The world, everybody's fat and happy because they borrow in dollars. They have to pay back less. Okay, what's going to break the system? A rising dollar, not a lower dollar. Mm-hmm. And what causes that? Look, it has been war, World War I, World War II. All the money went to the States. All right, but also what's causing it is the collapse in governments that we're seeing, like in the EU. And we're seeing problems in Japan. So, you know, now you have a set of bookends over there with Rocket Man. Mm-hmm. You got North Korea and you have Iran saying, oh, gee, that's a good idea. We're going to start a missile defense system right now.
Let me come very quickly. Long-term stock market. Long-term stock market.
Look, it is basically what we call this public versus private. At times, all right, you go back to the 20s, yes, the private sector got excessive. That is what crashed. And what do? You run to bonds. Okay. What do you do when government is the problem? Mm-hmm. You run to the private sector. This is why, you know, you've had, I mean, we came out and said, look, the Dow was going to make new highs, you know, back in 2010. Barron's wrote an article, said, oh, Armstrong says that Dow's going to make new highs. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And that was back in 2011. Yeah. All right, because they had never covered anything since because they were wrong.
Yeah.
All right. And you've had nothing but basically 7 years of analysts saying the stock market's going to crash any day now. I was asked to be on one show. I said, why do you want me on the show? He says, well, basically, you're the guy that has been bullish.
Yeah.
He says, it's just overwhelming. All the people on our show just bearish. So it's this capital movement. And if you just look at, you can go onto our site and look. We have a chart you can call up there. Just search S&P, you know, the P.E. ratio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were saying, oh, you know, 25 is too high. Okay, fine. The peak on the dot-com bubble was 50. Where is the historical high? 2009 at the low, reached 120. Mm-hmm. Why? If you don't trust the banks, you don't trust government, it gets to a point, I just want to put my money someplace so I get it back. It's not a question of what's my return. Okay, so P.E. ratios don't mean anything then. The peak of 120 is at the low in 2009.
So long term, I know you're positive. I know that. But
it's the Dow's going to go up
to a number we don't understand right now.
Yeah, your first resistance going into year end is around, you know, just under around 23,007. Mm-hmm. Then we have some around 25, 26. But this thing's going to like 40. Mm-hmm. It's going up much, much higher.
I'm talking with Martin Armstrong. I got time for rapid-fire questions when we come back, plus a Goofy Award, so stay with us.
He's so stagnant, he knows when he goes back to this mobile home, that's when it's back to the lab again, yo. This old rhapsody better go capture this moment and hope it don't do better. Lose his mouth in the music, the moment you own it, you better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime, you better lose
his... I say I'm too late, got nothing in my brain, that's what people say.
Taylor Swift. 2014, people at the 2013 Outlook remember Marty saying specifically, hey, guess what? After the Olympics next year, Ukraine's getting invaded. It happened. We're going to finish off with a little fun with Martin Armstrong. I call it the lightning round. 10 questions with Marty. Are you ready, Marty?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I never had to do one of these.
First big investment win.
I would have to say queuing in rare coins and silver back in the 60s.
Favorite long-haul airline. You fly a lot.
Oh, Lufthansa.
Most fun book you've read. You read a ton. Your house is full of them. But most fun you've had reading in the last year or two?
Not the last year, but I would say the Da Vinci Code. Everything else has been more or less history, not fun.
Favorite historical leader?
Maggie Thatcher.
Prediction that generated the most hate mail?
Oh, unquestionably gold peaking in 2011.
Most regularly repeated policy mistake that you see through history?
It's always raising taxes.
Best piece of financial advice maybe you ever gave or got?
Go with the flow, with the cycles. Don't fight them.
Financial worry that keeps you up at night? I think we got this one.
It's definitely the pension crisis. That's the first domino that pushes everything else over.
Now, the most interesting market in 2018?
It's going to be the rising dollar and stock market.
And favorite financial show on radio?
All right. I would say there is this crazy gray-haired guy. I think he's Canadian from Vancouver. I can't recall his name, but I think it's Mike something.
There you go. Right answer. You got it. I knew you'd get it right. Marty, thank you for having me in your home, and thank you for finding time, as you always do for us here.
Thank you for
so much appreciated. I got time for a very brief goofy. You know, this is kind of funny. At the University of California, Berkeley, they had an empathy tent. It was set up this past week. The empathy tent offered protesters a calm place to unwind in the chaos from the chaos around them. But you couldn't make this one up. According to the LA Times, things didn't go that well. In a nutshell, there was fighting in the empathy tent. It broke out. Left-wing activist Yvonne Fokera had to be arrested for battery. They had four other arrests, body armor, carrying banned weapons, all in the empathy tent. No word yet if John Lennon's Imagine was playing in the background. That's all the time we have. My thanks to Marty Armstrong. My thanks to Solera Club for all of their support. SoleraClub.com. And thanks for listening.